And we were sitting around one night at one of the big races, all the dads always afterwards, kids are in bed, sit around the fire, tell stories, drink some beer. He had just done a sprint race and he was bragging about the sprint race and how great it was. And everyone, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And as the night progressed and maybe a few more adult beverages went down, I finally kind of was fed up with hearing that. And I was like, I could beat you any day of the week in a triathlon.
Hi, and welcome to episode 8 of the Triathlon Age Group Journey. My name is Matt Summer, and with me today are my co-hosts and friends, Jillian Carlson and Jay Kinney. We are all busy working professionals, family people, and on good days, competitive age group triathletes. We love hearing stories that explain why age group triathletes choose to juggle day-to-day training and living life. We want to know that you are not alone in your efforts, whether it's in a basement, garage, shed, or the outdoors. We're all in this together, learning from one another. Today, I'm excited to have a good friend of mine as our guest. Jason Verbraeken is a coach, family man, and competitive triathlete. Jason has been racing for several years, and his specialty is extreme racing. Can't wait to hear about his story and how he got into this extreme sport.
Thanks, everyone. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, welcome, Jason.
We have a lot going on this week, but Jay, Jillian, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. I'm just getting back from a scout outing weekend where we headed up north to some cabins, and the boys were doing preparation for a competition next month. So they were, it's called Klondike. So they were pulling around a dog sled, but they were the dogs. So it's kind of a teamwork event. It's pretty cool to watch them come together and do that kind of thing. But it took the day off yesterday from working out and came back, watched that World Cup final. That was really awesome today. And felt a little feisty afterwards and went ahead and did a Zwift race. I hadn't tested my race legs since last probably November. I entered category C because that's basically, you know, where I've been lately. And I got disqualified because I was way over the wattage for C. So I ended up winning the C category, but it didn't count. Zwift power filtered me out. So I picked wrong today.
Aim low, shoot high, or something like that.
Yeah. That should have gone. So anyway, it wasn't wasted. At least I know I put the effort in.
Nice work. Nice. Yeah, I ended up catching the World Cup this morning as well. I have to be honest, I haven't watched that much of the soccer, but my son ended up getting into this, the very end of it, the World Cup, which was kind of fun. So he and I watched it this morning. And yeah, pretty exciting win for Argentina, that's for sure. But other than that, been frantically doing Christmas shopping. And I have to say, this is probably the most prepared I've ever been, or the most done with my shopping before Christmas Eve ever in my life, which is really nice feeling, except it's also like, I don't want to go to another mall for another 6 months. I never really liked going to the mall anyway, to be honest, but now I really just have no desire to go back to the malls.
I think what gets me there the worst is the parking lots. I cannot stand the parking lots. How long it takes to park. When I was out west with you, Jillian, at Thanksgiving, and we went to the mall, I think it took me 20 minutes to find a parking spot, just pacing back and forth. And I was over it before I even got in the mall.
Yeah, that one was extra bad. Thankfully, the malls I've been going to hasn't been too bad, or I just know it's going to. So I just go park way out far away. But oh, there are just so many people and so much stuff.
It's just a true test of my patience, and I have none. The Christmas spirit just sits there, and very quickly I can just be like, okay, I'm done with this. Out of here. Bye. So, but I don't know. It's been quite a busy day for me. Got up, did an early morning run. Again, fair weather runner here. It was about 21 degrees here in North Carolina, and it was a little too cold for me to get outside. So I jumped on the treadmill, knocked out some good threshold intervals, which was nice. And it was a big day in my household. I was super proud. My son got recognized today as a North Carolina All-State soccer player. So very super proud of him, his senior year. So we had that banquet in Greensboro. I'm not sure who planned it today, but what about bad timing? I mean, it is in the middle of the World Cup. It is 2-2, getting ready to go to overtime, and this ceremony is getting ready to start. So here you have probably 80 of the top soccer players in the state. The coaches, the parents, we're all fanatics, and everybody's sitting around scrolling on their phone with no signal. No signal whatsoever. I'm sitting here. Jillian's texting me what's going on. I can't even see it. I'm like, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. So we got to watch it to where it was 2-2, had to drive in the car. Max is my son. He's scrolling it or streaming it, and nerve-breaking though, but it was good to see Messi finally get that win. So Jason, how about you? How's your weekend going so far?
It was good. I've been literally gone for the past 5 out of the 6 weekends. I've been gone every weekend doing stuff, watching athletes race, helping support them. So being at home, there is a whole list of stuff that I need to get done. And so it was doing things around the house, getting – I literally realized on Friday that Christmas was, you know, the next weekend. So I'm definitely behind a little bit, but caught up pretty good right now, and getting some packages out in the mail tomorrow. So give or take, they're going to make it there by Christmas, or keep my fingers crossed. But yeah, just literally catching up on everything. There's so much that accumulates when you're not home for 5-6 weekends. And oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You try to do that during the week between working and working out, and yeah, never happens the way you want it to.
Yeah.
I think belated gifts get a bad rap. I love belated gifts because it's after you think it's all over, and then another one shows up. So
it's funny. I had a good friend of mine. Their family used to celebrate Christmas after Christmas, and they would take advantage of all the sales. Like their big thing was on the 26th, the day after. I think they call it Boxing Day. But anyway, they would go out and they'd all go shopping, and it was better sales. You could get the returns, and I mean, they loved it. And I was like, that's actually kind of neat, you know? My favorite part of the holidays is definitely Christmas Eve. I always equate it. It's like the build up, the anticipation. And then, you know, I always say that like the day after an Ironman's like Christmas Day once the presents have all been opened. It's like, now what? And that's the best way I can explain, like, when you've been working towards something so much, the anticipation, the excitement, and then you're left there and you're like, okay, like twiddling your thumbs, crickets. But yeah, I don't know. That's just
we don't have any Lego sets to build anymore after, you know, you open it.
Yeah.
We're past the age that we get those things.
Yeah.
Now the kids just disappear and go straight back to their room. So
yeah. Video games.
Pretty much. Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, Matt, what do you have lined up for us for quote of the week?
All right. Well, I've been told I have to keep it to one this week, so we're going to keep it simple. And this is a really good one for this time of year. A pretty simple concept. It's not about having time. It's about making time. I think that one really speaks dear to my heart, because all too often, I know I get busy, and busy is a word I hate to use. Productive is the word I like to use. But just finding the time to call my mother, call my sister, call my friends, check in on them, check in on my athletes, and, you know, getting that workout in, prioritizing other things. We all have 168 hours in the week, no more, no less. It's what you do with them that makes you productive, not busy. That's how I like to think about that. What do you guys think about that?
I definitely like this. And, you know, it's about prioritization and how you manage that. But I also immediately thought of probably one of my favorite podcasters out there, Jocko Willink, if you know him, is a Navy SEAL. But discipline equals freedom is his thing. And that's what it takes. You got to have the discipline to prioritize your life and what is important to you. And that you'll make the time to do that. So that's what really hit me right away when you said it.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And, you know, especially these last few weeks, as you're trying to balance holidays and kids and still, you know, trying to get workouts in, it's a little bit of, you know, you've got to make that time. You got to build it into your schedule. You've got to also have a little bit of flexibility, because sometimes things do come up and you can't always hit that. If you don't at least start out with the intention of making the time and giving, like, scheduling your workouts or scheduling whatever it is that is really important to you, and prioritizing, you know, what it is that you need to do and get done for the day. If it is making sure that you talk to that family member or send that email or, you know, send that Christmas card, it's you either have to schedule it or make it a priority so that you can get it done. So you're not running out of time, and you at least hit the big things, the most important things on the list.
That's good perspective. How about you, Jason?
Yeah, I love it. Because like you said, we all have the same amount of time in the week or in a day. And it's what you do with that time, right? I mean, you could, oh, I didn't have time to go work out. I didn't have time for this. Oh, but did you see that new Netflix? Oh, yeah, I watched that whole series. Well, yeah. Okay, yeah. I see where your time went. And now I know where, you know, where my time goes. And we, you know, we all have the same amount of hours, and it's what you do with it and how productive you want to be. You know, they say, yeah, if it matters to you, you're going to find the time, right?
Exactly. It's not just about workouts. It's about everything in your life. We all find the time and the money for what's important to us, or we make the time and we put the money into what's important to us. Jillian kind of mentioned having the flexibility, being able to be fluid, be dynamic in our scheduling, and you got to prioritize and you got to get done what needs to be done on that day. And if working out's one of them, great. I think one area for me, and I try to be pretty darn transparent, is about just having those connections with my family and friends. I can get really caught up on not checking in on people. And unfortunately, they're the people that mean the world to me. They're my whys in life. And it's like, I'm guilty of that all the time. And it makes me sick sometimes. I hate to acknowledge that, because I'll get the workout in. I definitely will make time for that workout. Those that know me know I'm a better father. I'm a better fitness director. I'm a better coach. I'm a better just person when I get that workout in. And that's hard for me. So,
yeah. Not to spoil your intro here, but that this quote probably is going to mean a lot when we talk about Jason's resume here. So
absolutely.
Why don't you dive into that, Matt?
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned earlier, today we got Jason Verbracken with us. Jason's been a close friend of mine now for probably going on 2 years. We both are coaches with TriDot Triathlon Coaching. Jason has quite the resume, just a little glimpse of it. He's raced Aloha Man Extreme Tri, second overall, Black Lake Extreme Tri, fifth overall, Ultraman Arizona, fifth overall, the Himalayan Extreme Tri, ninth overall, and he's raced the famous Norseman Triathlon. One of the coolest things that he's done, and I can't wait to hear about this a little, is he did 5 days of full distance, iron distance triathlons with the Iron Cowboy during his Conquer 100. 5 days of consecutive Ironmans. Talk about extreme. And most recently, just always giving back to the sport, just a good human being. Can't say enough about that as well. He most recently guided a visually impaired triathlete at Ironman California 2 months ago. So Jason, welcome. We're happy to have you on the show and can't wait to hear a little bit more about you.
Thanks again. Like I said, I'm excited to be here. And the resume isn't, it sounds great doing that, but it's nothing. I mean, it's nothing nobody else has done either. So, I mean, no big deal.
Very humble. But so extreme triathlon. I know that wasn't where you started. I mean, you didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to do an extreme triathlon. I maybe you did. I don't think that's humanly possible. How did you get into the sport? I mean, give us a little bit about your background, your childhood, your upbringing, and how that became triathlon for you.
Well, I was born and raised in Wisconsin, grew up playing hockey, wasn't a runner, wasn't a swimmer, wasn't a biker. I mean, except, you know, had the BMX bike growing up, the Haro, thought I was going to be a professional BMX trick guy, but that didn't pan out very good. Never had, you know, road bike or anything like that. Got out of high school, went right into the Marine Corps, realized in the Marine Corps, I hated running, and I don't know why I went in the Marine Corps then, but right. They definitely made us run a lot, but did end up falling in love with it. But swore once I got out of the Marine Corps, never race, never going to run again, unless I was getting paid for it like I was there. But ended up married, kids. My son was in the motocross, so we traveled the world. He started racing 6 years old and raced all the way till he was 18. So he was on different factory teams, and we've traveled the world, like I said, won gold medal at the junior world championships. And actually his trainer was an old pro, and we were sitting around one night at one of the big races, all, you know, all the dads always afterwards, kids are in bed, sit around the fire, tell stories, drink some beer. He had just done a sprint race, and he was bragging about the sprint race and how great it was, and everyone, oh, that's awesome. And as the night progressed and maybe a few more adult beverages went down, I finally kind of was fed up with hearing that. And I was like, I could beat you any day of the week in a triathlon. And so a bet was formed, and he immediately knew of a race. Being Southern California, there's races quite a bit. So he found a race that was 3 months from that time. And I literally was like, oh boy, I got to do this. So I had a membership to 24 Hour Fitness, and I literally did all my training at 24 Hour Fitness. I didn't have anything. I had some run shoes. So I ran on the treadmill. I rode a spin bike and I swam in the pool. My swimming, I grew up, I knew how to swim. Like, you know, my parents definitely put me in swimming lessons so I could swim to get your water skis on, you know, make it back to the boat, anything like that, so I wouldn't drown. But, you know, just started watching YouTube and practicing in the pool. And I ended up having to borrow a bike. I'm 6'3". I borrowed a bike from my friend. He was a size 54. The bike frame was a 54. And I'm a size 12 to 13 shoes. He had size 10. I borrowed all of it because I was just doing the one race. And that was it, just to beat him. And I ended up.
Or so you thought.
Yeah. Well, I ended up beating him, and I really had a lot of fun doing it. But then I was like, no offense to any triathlon guys, because I'm one of them, but I'm like, man, these people are all dorky people, right? I'm like, look at what they're wearing. They're wearing these spandex stuff. And I was like, oh, this is not me. So I had nothing to do with triathlon again for years, 5 years, I think it was. But that whole time it was in the back of my head. I had a great time doing it. And I grew up wide world of sports, saw the Iron Man. So that was always like, that seed was planted back there. And then I was just literally like, God, I had so much fun. I missed that. I missed training for it. So I called him up and I said, hey, do you want to have a rematch? Cause I was too embarrassed to just say I liked it and wanted to get back into it myself. So I used him as an excuse, and he's like, yeah, let's do another one. That'd be awesome. And this time I bought a bike off Craigslist. I actually bought some shoes that fit me. I bought the bike fit me. And so then I knew I was committed from there, and, just kept going from there. I beat him again the second time. So I'm 2-0 against him and our triathlon challenges. And, gosh, after that second sprint rematch, I was like, how am I going to stay in this? And I signed up for Ironman Arizona. It was November. And I'm like, okay, that gives me a year to train. And the rest, they say, is history, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it all started with a couple beers and a bet, huh?
It's how most things start, right?
I wonder how many people got into their first race because of alcohol and a bet.
Oh yeah. And I know plenty that I've talked to that's like, yeah, we were all talking around, and yeah, we had some drinks, and next thing you know, we signed up for this marathon, or we signed up for this event. And it always seems to kind of start like that.
That's funny.
I love how you also mentioned, you know, the triathletes being, you know, dorks and in like spandex. I remember my brother-in-law, when we first started riding with my dad, we just do bike rides for fun. And my mom was bringing up how my brother-in-law, Chris, had said, you know, you won't catch me dead in spandex. And he'd do our long bike rides in his running shorts even. Maybe he'd have like, you know, some spandex underneath, but he'd have the shorts on. And next thing you know, here we are a few years later, and he's full on triathlete, does a spandex on the bike ride. And my mom had seen a picture, and it just was pretty funny. And yeah.
Yep. So true. It's so true. I swore I'd never be wearing spandex. How could you not just wear board shorts to a pool and swim? I was like, there's no way I'd ever be in a Speedo or something. And now here I am.
I know our listeners can't see it, but Jason is wearing his tri kit right now as we're doing this podcast, just so everybody knows. Very comfortable in spandex these days. Yes. And you look good too, Jason, just so you know.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You had mentioned hockey. I played hockey for 3 years in my early 30s because I was looking for something hard to do. And I think you discounted what it did for your engine as a kid, probably, if you played all those years. And then you went into the Marine Corps. There's got to be something behind that that has gotten you to this extreme side of triathlon? Is there a timeline or a history that's really built something in your head about doing tough things?
You know, it's always been a trigger inside my head. And I can always remember growing up, my dad, you know, and of course we want to impress our dads, right? I always remember him saying, you know, send in the Marines. They're the toughest guys out there. Send in the Marines, you know? So I literally, end of my junior year, I was like, signed up for the Marines. What's the toughest you got? Infantry. They're like, you scored these really good scores on all your tests. There's so many other jobs. I'm like, I want the guys that are carrying the guns that go in first. Cause in my head, that's the toughest thing. So if we got all psychological and had the counselor here, he'd probably say, always trying to impress my dad, showing him, look how tough I became. You know, there's a trigger in there. I don't know if it keeps me motivated in training, but I always say if the race scares me and excites me at the same time, where's my credit card? You know, that's what I'm signing up for. There's that something in there that just, I like coming up with the plan. How are we going to do this? What do I got to do to accomplish this? If I don't follow these steps, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to finish this race. It's, you know, I can't just wing it and, oh, I got this great base and yeah, I'll be able to squeeze by. It's, you know, I always make sure I'm signed up for something very, very difficult that if it doesn't push me, then I'm going to fail.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of my favorite quotes too. I have to say, not to steal Matt's thunder on quotes, but yeah, if it scares you and excites you, you probably should do it. So Jason, what then took you to the next level after you did Ironman Arizona to actually go in and do some of these more extreme tries?
Well, but one of the issues I have is I'm either all in on something or all out on something. And literally when I was training for IMAZ, I saw the video for Alaska Man. And I don't even know how I found it. Maybe it found me. We found each other. And there was the Alaska Man video and the very first one they had. Iron Cowboy was there racing it. And, you know, temperatures. I've seen the video. I probably watch it almost every other time I'm on the trainer. I click it on YouTube. It just, I don't know. It just re-clicks my brain. It like resets me into that mode. Like remember where I started. And, I saw that video and they're swimming in this cold water and people can barely get all the water. They're having to carry them and they're freezing and their teeth are chattering. And then the beautiful views in the mountains. And I was like, I'm signing up for the next race now. And I hadn't even done an Ironman. I had done literally a couple sprints on my resume and I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Stop what you're doing. Like I said, I'm all in. So I'm like, let's sign up for everything. And something in my brain's like, look, obviously I'd been on the internet, see people, sometimes they do an Ironman or something, one and done. They don't know. They say they're never going to do it again. So I held myself back. They literally had the lottery open for Alaska Man. I had to tell myself, you are not signing up. You are not signing up. Not till after IMAZ. So when I finished IMAZ and then I was trying to figure out what the next step was going to be. And all of a sudden I got an email from, you know, I signed up for their mailing list. I got an email from Alaska Man. Everybody who won a lottery spot didn't sign up and we have openings to Alaska Man. And I was like, oh, it's a sign from the triathlon gods telling me. And they said, it's going to be a first come, first serve basis, you know, noon on Thursday, you get a sign up. And 11:55, I was on the computer, refresh, refresh, refresh. And as soon as that thing opened up at 12, boom, in, paid, done. So my second race, I signed up literally Ironman into Alaska Man. And I just, something just drew me to it and how crazy and beautiful and just that whole thing again of, can I do it? This scares me. How am I going to do this?
What are the distances for that one?
That one was the 2.4 mile swim. Ended up being like 114 miles and it only had like 5,000 feet of elevation gain. And then the run was 26.2 miles and it had, I think, like 7,000 feet of elevation gain on the run. Yeah, you ran up the mountain, down the mountain, up the mountain, and down the mountain. And I can say that's the one race they mandatory bear spray had to be with you on your on your race belt. You had to carry bear spray.
That made me run faster.
Yeah. And we did encounter some bears too right at the end. And I was so exhausted. And there's a mama bear and her cubs. And the one thing you don't want to see, right? That they warn you about, don't get it. And now looking at it, they were 300-400 meters off, but they seemed close. And you have to have a support runner with you. So my support, he's got his camera, he's taking pictures, and they're like literally told us, hey, we could stop the race if you know there's danger of bears. And I was about a mile from the finish line, and I was like, oh my God, they're gonna call this race. I'm not gonna get across the finish line. And he's like, no, we got this. I'm like, put your phone away. We got to go. And he's trying to film. And I thought the bears were on the trail we were going. And he literally is like, all right, let's go. And we took a left and it went the complete opposite direction where we had to go. And I was making a big deal out of nothing. But, you know, race brain was kicking in. I was half delirious. Still seeing the bears out there, and my trigger finger was literally on my bear spray. Like, all right, if they come close to me, and he's laughing at me, and everything seems way closer. You know, objects in me are closer than they appear. That was me.
So, yes. Alaska Man was kind of like a gateway drug for you into even bigger, though. I mean, what happened after Alaska Man? What did you set your sights on?
I at Alaska Man, I won a spot in the Norseman, the race that, you know, I hear all the, you know, I had a grasp what Norseman was, but I really didn't. I'm so new into the sport, so new into everything. And I dove headfirst in, and they were there and they had joined the X-Tri family, was the race organization that puts on Norseman. And they gave spots away. This was kind of the first thing. They just started giving spots. And, you know, Norseman's a lottery that has 4,000 to 5,000 people that apply for it. And they take so many Norwegians, and it's a hard chance to get in the race. And I've literally won a spot into it. And I can just remember they were calling people's names or calling race bibs, and they called the bib, and nobody, either the person had already left or they're like, we don't want to go to Norseman. And nobody answered. Then a third person, nobody answered. And then they called my race bib, and I looked at my supporter and he looked at me. And I mean, I jumped up and like, I will go. And the whole place just erupted and cheering. And yeah, I That's won awesome. A spot to Norseman. And then that, I'm so headfirst in race director came out a couple months later and said, hey, I'm putting on this race in Iceland and it's a week before Norseman. And my buddy's like, hey, you would be one of the only person who's ever done Iceland. And then a week later went to and raced Norseman. And I'm like, let's sign up. So I signed up for Iceland Extreme, another extreme a week beforehand. And then that same race director said, hey, I got a race going on in December then in Hawaii, Aloha Man. And I'm like, let's sign up for that too. So that year was literally Iceland, Norseman, and Aloha Man. Three big extreme races with a lot of climbing and a lot of crazy running. And I just went all in as much as I could literally go in.
And what's your wife thinking at this point? Is she taking your temperature? Is she thinking, Jason, you're crazy? I mean, her support, her encouragement, is she right there with you? Or
she knows I'm nuts. And
she knew what she was getting into, huh?
She knew what she was getting into. She knew the, we'll say, addictive personality of things. So, yeah, she just kind of shakes her head and's like, that's where you're going now? Like, Hawaii, she was all in. Yeah. Let's go to Hawaii. No problem. The Iceland Norseman, she's like, I can't be gone that long. Luckily for me, I'm able to take that much time off. But no, she's supportive of it. And she's more supportive of the races and not so much all the training in the races and how we can, for me anyways, I kind of get caught up in it. And you know, a weekend can, when you're doing 6-7 hours on the bike and you're long, you know, and then an off the bike run, and then the next day you're going on a long trail run or whatever, your weekend's gone. I mean, you're so tired afterwards. So it's really, there's a lot of times that scale, that balance isn't there. I'm definitely one-sided heavy when it gets deep into race mode, and you know, those long weeks really add up. But she understands that once that comes out of it, that I try to balance the go the other way and make it more whatever the family needs going on. The scales obviously more towards that side. So it's a little bit of give and take there.
Absolutely.
Jason.
So what does some of the training look like as you're leading into the race? Is it just always nonstop long rides, long runs, or do you have some decent training for a while and then build up just a little bit beforehand?
It's pretty much like training for your normal Ironman. Okay. Obviously with more climbing involved, and I'm very lucky. Again, San Diego, I got mountains I can go to. I feel like I get better workouts on the trainer. So I have the Wahoo kicker, the full Wahoo setup. So that kicker and climb definitely help with all the different climbing. And I'll put that thing at 18 degree incline and climb on that for an hour or two. And, but it's, I train the exact same way. I mean, obviously sometimes the bike rides get a little bit longer, just because obviously we're going slower with that amount of elevation. So, and then most of my runs just turn into my week runs will be on concrete. And then the weekend, the long runs will be back into the trails. And then as the race gets closer, I'm lucky enough, I'll go to the mountains for the weekend and get in the higher altitude and also being biking and running up in the actual mountains. And then I also, again, extreme, I have an altitude tent, so I will sleep in an altitude tent starting 2 months up or before the race. And I'll start at like 4,000 feet and end up sleeping at 11,000 feet for like the last month. I kind of build it up slowly and then sleep at 11,000 feet every night leading up to event. They say train low, sleep high. It's less stress on less stress on your body, and you know, helps with the red blood cells and all that good stuff.
I don't think we've really said it yet on the podcast here, but these extreme triathlons still mimic the distances of a full distance Ironman. It's all about the extreme terrain that we're talking about. Very cold swims or ocean swim, big climbs on the bike, and obviously trail and big, difficult technical running on trail, right?
Yes. Yeah. Most of them, I would say average, the bike is usually 9,000 feet or more for the bike. And then the runs are between 4, I would say, to 7,000-8,000 kind of is the range on the runs. And, it's all self-supported. You have a team, which that's one thing I really ended up really liking about it. It's, it's lonely on the Ironmans, you could say. I mean, not lonely. You got thousands of other people out there. You got all these aid stations, but, it's a whole team effort. You know, when the family came and watched me on Ironman, they would be like, "Oh, there he goes on his bike. Yay, go Jason." And all right, we'll see him 5 hours later. All right. Now let's go get breakfast and take a nap. And where this is, they're basically, they are with you. Your crew's with you. They're helping you out of the water. They're helping you change. They're jumping in the car, leapfrogging you, giving you your water, giving you what you need. They're in it as much as you are. It just makes that day so much more special that they can be. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be able to finish the race. They're my main artery.
So I want to take a step back here. You just said that you did 2 extreme triathlons within 1 week. So you did Iceland first. Talk about that race, and then I want to hear how you recovered leading into Norseman, which how did you treat those? This is 2 extreme triathlons and back-to-back weekends.
So yeah, went to Iceland. Obviously, that was first. That was my C race, we called it. And it was definitely, my coach wanted me, that was just the warm-up race, basically. Again, it was 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, the whole run. The bike, I think the bike only had like 7,000 feet of climbing. So swim was at race pace. He was good with that. Bike was at race pace. That was fine. And then the run I had, I couldn't let my heart get mid zone two. I could not go higher than that. So it was basically, and it was up 6 miles, down 6 miles. It was an out and back, and then turn around, up 6 miles, down 6 miles. And it literally, I basically walked the whole thing, which was very, very hard. I came off the bike in like fourth place and just watched all my competition jog by me as I waved. And, you know, that was, it was very humbling. And, but, you know, I had to keep telling myself there is a bigger goal in here. Nice. And obviously the run beats your body up the worst. So that's why he didn't want me running. The main goal was Norseman getting the famous black t-shirt that Norseman is known for. Or if you didn't know, you know. So that was the main thing. And then it literally was swim, swim, swim. After the race, just getting that blood going. Normatec boots, foam roller, ate a lot of food. Made sure all that nutrition was back in me. And then, you know, break down the bike, hop on the plane, fly over to Norway. And then I think it was Thursday. I biked. I never did another run. I didn't run at all in between them. It was just bike, easy bike Thursday and an easy bike Friday. But you know, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays were, I swam, just got the body moving and then in for racing for Norseman.
Now, you just mentioned the black jersey. I know through our conversations we had, and I know you're very proud of that, probably one of your proudest moments, but you did earn that black jersey. Tell me a little bit about that and what it was like when you got that.
Oh, it was, I mean, again, they only take, there's two cutoffs for on the mountain. They take the first 160 people, or there's a time limit too. You know, you have to beat both of them. And again, there's only 250 people racing, and there's people that have been trying to get in this race 7-8 years. I mean, these aren't just everyday Joes. Again, it's an extreme race. So I guess I thought I knew the competition was going to be tough, but I didn't think it was going to be that tough. And you jump off a ferry into the Forge and you swim to land. Basically, they take you out 2.4 miles and jump off and then start the race. And I got, you know, had a great swim. I just remember feeling amazing. Like, this is awesome. Jumped out of the water and it was like a 109, which that was my PR. That was my best swim ever in my short career.
And what was the water temperature out there?
It was actually a decent day. It was like 56, 57. It was warmer than normal for them. So it was actually nice.
And what time of day, don't you guys start in the dark for that too?
Yeah, it was like 5 a.m. I think we jumped off the ship at like 4:45 and the race started.
And there's no sunlight, right?
No sunlight. The sun's, I mean, you can kind of see the horizon. You know how you can kind of see that glow starting? You kind of have that.
So 54 degrees, pitch black, jump in.
Not a little. 56.
Okay. Yeah. 57. 56. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a great
time.
In Norway.
Isn't that where like Loch Ness Monster lives? I don't know. That's what I'd be thinking about.
Jillian, that's Scotland.
Scotland. Never mind.
It's over there somewhere.
They have other monsters in Norway.
Yeah.
And I got
the verbies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Harry Potter dragons, I think, are in Norway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And I got out of that water and I just had the biggest smile on my face. And I see my supporter and I'm like, that was a great swim. What place am I in? He's like, you're already 162. And I'm all, what? So in my head, we got the transition and 3/4 of the bike's already gone. And I was like, my jaw hit the ground. I was like, oh boy, this is not good. I'm in for a long, long day. I mean, I went from the highest of my, I remember it clearly. I was on the highest of high, best swim ever, to going, I'm already not making cutoff. There's already that many people ahead of me. And I just had to literally like, it's a long day. Stay positive. You know how to bike. I know how to bike. I can do that. And I got on that bike and just put my head down and worked and worked. And yeah, I think it has almost 11,000 feet of climbing. And I mean, right out of T2, you're literally half a mile and you climb like 4,500 feet. So you're literally climbing for like 2 hours right out of transition. Out of T1, sorry. And I went and I worked and I came into T2 in 85th place. So I made up quite a bit of ground. And then thankfully it's the first half marathon is a flat. And before you hit the road to the ski resort, where it just switchbacks going up. And I got to there in almost the same place. And I knew I had the shirt. I knew going up, it wasn't going to be anybody, you know, there wasn't going to be that many people passing me. That I just started walking and having fun, because obviously my body was tired from the weekend before, and I really gave it on the bike to make up that ground. And just when I got to the spot, and they're like, you're 101, I think I came over that spot in, and they're like, your reward is to keep climbing to the top of that mountain. Hey, lucky you. And you know, it was just great. And then obviously that wore off very quickly as you're still running, walking for another 3-4 hours to make it to the top of that mountain. But crossing that finish line up on top was amazing. It was so beautiful and so amazing, and just all that hard work. And yeah, it was one of the highlights of my short career.
Awesome. That's amazing. So now also you were able to tag along with James Lawrence, the Iron Cowboy, for his Conquer 100. And for those, I actually ended up following that journey as well. I got up and watched like every day on my drive to the pool. His wife would be on live as he was doing the swimming. And so it was just a little bit of extra motivation every day for myself that, you know, he's out swimming again, another full distance triathlon. And so you had the opportunity to go out and actually join him for 5 days. And I'm really curious what that was like, the atmosphere, the environment, and then also just how you handled the wear and tear on your body. I know you only did 5 days and he did 101 just because, but yeah.
Yeah, it was, well, that was all trying to get the years right, trying to figure out what year we were in, but that was obviously during the COVID time. And I was actually training for the Himalayan Extreme Tri. And, you know, same as you, I saw his journey going and I'm like, this, oh, amazing. And, you know, seeing, you know, he'd always been somebody I looked up to with his whole, you know, 50-50-50, the 50 states, 50 Ironmans. And like I said, he was the guy I saw in the Alaska Man videos, Iron Cowboy. Oh my gosh, he's raced, you know, that got me into this craziness. And literally 2 weeks before the Himalayan Extreme Tri, the Friday before I was supposed to fly, 2 weeks before the race director emailed us and said, the race is canceled. And I was, I had been literally training for this race for, it was supposed to happen in 2020. And then I trained for it. It got postponed to the fall of 2020. It got postponed again to the spring of, that must have been, 21. And so COVID numbers jumped up right at the time we were supposed to be heading there. And he said, I don't know if you'll be able to get in the country, but the country's going to shut down and we don't know when you'll be able to leave Nepal. So we're not going to let all these athletes come and race. That's not a good decision. So I had all this fitness of training and high altitude training, and I had the vacation time. And so I called up a buddy and who was going with, he was my support for Nepal. And I said, hey, let's do something. We got the time off. We've got all this fitness. What do you want to do? And you know, I had a couple ideas written down. One was go do rim to rim to rim and go meet up with, you know, because James was telling people, hey, come up. You can do them with me. If you only want to do the run, do whatever. And I said, hey, let's either go see how many we can do or let's go do rim to rim to rim. And my buddy goes, rim to rim to rim will always be there. We can do that anytime. He's like, James Lawrence, let's go check him out. So I called up another tri-dotter, Andrew Soderberger. He ended up, we grabbed him on the way up to Utah, and he was our Sherpa slash support. And my buddy Daniel and I went and said, hey, let's see how many we can do with them. So we rolled in late Friday night and was at the pool first thing Saturday morning. And, you know, it was kind of surreal because, like you said, Sonny was there every morning and filming. And now here I am at that pool getting ready. And, you know, it was kind of, I thought it was going to be more of this huge production thing going, but it was just that kind of core crew. It was a weekend. It was a Saturday, like I said. So there were more people because people didn't have to work. So it was a little bigger. We got in and started swimming, and that was great. Went out on the bike, and, you know, there was no rush between transitions. I mean, he was in his 60s already, like day 61, 62. So he was already up there. So he was in a whole different state of mind, you know, really. I'll get to that in a few, but, you know, we got out, ended up, my friend got a flat tire, and actually when he pulled over, somebody ran into him and had a big bike crash while he was pulled over the side. Somebody didn't see it. And there was a kind of a mess up in the group that they were riding. They were behind a little bit and trying to play catch up and ended up running into him. And so he kind of got messed up. I got to the run on the T2, and we had taken a break or waiting for James to show up. And I had a hernia that I couldn't get operated on earlier because it was COVID. So it wasn't not mandatory, but it wasn't a life or death situation. Yeah. So yeah, well, it had pushed its way out. And so I got up from sitting down, and I'm just like, oh, I was in so much pain. Well, all of a sudden James would just show up at the spot where the run starts. Well, it was just us there. Nobody else was there yet in the run. And he just hopped out and was like, you guys running with me? Let's go. And I'm like, he's on day 60. I'm not going to be a wimp here and say, sorry, James, my hernia thing is hurting here. You're on 61 days, and there's no way I'm going to look like that wimp, right? My ego was in, and so I got up and started running with them and did the whole 26.2 miles, and I was in the worst pain of my life. Oh. I was hobbled over. I kept trying to push it back in because it had come out, kind of pushed out before, and I could push it in. But this time when it got out and the force guy, yeah, it expanded more. So there was no way. We got to the finish line and he always did his speech. And I know there's film out there, but I was in the background puking all over the place. I was taking whatever pain pills I could find that people had. I remember I took some Midol, and I'm like, it was like, this lady's like, I got, you know, whatever I could find, I was popping. And I puked everywhere on the finish line. And then we ended up going to the emergency room that night. And they wanted to do, he's like, well, we could probably do a surgery later in this week. And I'm like, no, let's just get it back in. So they got it back in. And he basically like, I'm like, so can I go out and go again tomorrow? And the doctor looked at me. He's like, there's no way. He goes, you got to take it easy. You know, this, something bad could happen. If this thing pinches, you could back up at your whole system and really you could die. And I was like, okay, but what can I look for? And he's like, well, if you're not going to the bathroom, that's trouble. So the next day, I didn't go out the next day. None of us went out the next day because my friend had crashed. So he was pretty sore. So we skipped Sunday. I just basically slept the whole day because we were in the emergency room till 3-4 in the morning. Monday, we got up and we went and swam. And I want to see how I feel. I'm going to the bathroom. Everything's good. Let's see. And I felt normal. I felt fine. So I went back to the house and just started getting everything ready. I go, I'm going back with them again. Tuesday, I'm going full out. There's no way I'm not doing another full with them. And then, so sure enough, got out Tuesday. I went Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And there's a couple times it was kind of hurting, but I caught it early and was able to kind of keep my hand there and keep it from pushing out. And, you know, and it's pretty cool. I got some of the videos of him, and, you know, he pulled me up there and was like, this, you know, I mean, it was another one of my great, you know, Iron Cowboy saying, how much he looked up for me to, you know, coming out and be able to keep pushing and continuing on this many more days, and how much respect he had for me. And all. I mean, that was probably cool. One of the highest points, you know, somebody like him saying he was looking up to me for motivation to keep pushing was amazing.
Jason, I want to say this out of the most respect of what you're doing. When I was in that hockey locker room with guys that had been playing hockey all their life, and I'd never had, you know, I'm an adult onset hockey player in this, you know, they would self-admit they had screws loose, and they would talk about these things. And what you just described was like flashbacks to the stories these guys would say about, I'm not going to quit. And there's something about the sport of hockey that plants these seeds, I think. I don't know. What is it about hockey that does that? Can you explain that to me? I know it's totally off topic. We're a triathlon podcast, but there's something that I'm endeared by the hockey mindset that must be,
I mean, it
part of this.
It toughens you up. I mean, you're playing back then. There wasn't a lot of indoor rinks. So you're playing in the middle of winter at 8, 9 years old, and it could be negative 20 degrees, and you're just wanting to play something you love. And I mean, you're getting hit and you're sliding in front of pucks as they're slapshotting, trying to, you know, to block a shot and getting nailed by hockey pucks. And, you know, it's a rough sport. You know, I mean, obviously they didn't let you drop the gloves in high school or anything to start boxing, but I mean, as it, you know, the older they are, I mean, that's what you learn. That's what you watch. It's, you're ready to go. Yeah. I mean, it's, you're, and I don't know if that helped install some toughness in me, but just that, you know, that cold, being out in that cold weather and all that stuff, it just was ingrained in me.
I mean, Jason, I don't want to get sentimental here, but I know your dad was one of the most influential people in your life. And from what you said at the beginning about the Marine Corps and bringing the infantry, I know he's looking down on you right now, proud as can be. I mean, you just need to know you have made him proud. And I know he didn't get to see you do your extreme tries, but, you know, I guarantee you he's looking down right now, smiling, saying that's my son and how proud of you he is. What a journey you've had. I mean, you do hard things, man. You do really damn hard things. And I mean, as a veteran for our armed services, serving in the Marines and taking everything to the next level, there's no doubt in my mind and my heart that he's sitting there looking at you proud as can be. So
thank you. Awesome. Yeah, and I appreciate that. It means a lot. You know, he passed away before I did my first Ironman, as I was actually in training for it right in the beginning of August. And that is right before he passed away is when I saw the Alaska Man thing. And I had told him about this. Oh my God, this. And he had said, oh, you know, maybe I'll go up there with you and we'll, you know, I can take time, we'll take it as a vacation. And so, I mean, I didn't want to get all sentimental in that first one, but I said, oh, the tri gods were, and, you know, when I first got that email saying, hey, Alaska Man's open, I was like, this is a sign from my dad saying, you need to go do this race. Definitely. So that's how it all.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's got their whys. You know,
right.
Yeah. But not only are you amazing and push yourself beyond what most other people do, but you also give back to the sport, right? So just recently you were a guide for a blind athlete at an Ironman. And what's that like?
That I'm going to say that was one of the most nervous times before a race I had. I didn't want to mess up for him. He had put in a lot of work, and that, you know, once you hit the water, everything goes, you know, goes good. All that worry got away. It was amazing. You know, it was doing a race for a whole, obviously for someone else. It wasn't about me. That day was for David. And, you know, it was, you realize how much, wow, really goes into it. I mean, that, you know, we take for granted. David is visually impaired. I mean, he still can see, but you still have to let him know what's going on. You know, tandem bike, run the bike together. I can't just reach down and grab a water bottle to take a drink like I'm used to. It's, everything's got to be announced, because, you know, I take my hand off one of the bars and reach down, that can throw the whole bike off. And in turn, he also jolts it more and we could go down. So, you know, really got to let him know, I'm going to take a drink. All right, take a drink. Grabbing my water bottle. Done taking a drink, putting water bottle away. You know, everything's announced. And even, you know, you start seeing some rough roads ahead. In your head, you're just, oh, rough roads. You just automatically know, hold on tight. Well, he doesn't know that. So, yeah. You know, you really can't zone out. You got to really stay attentive and making sure you're calling everything out for him or, you know, whoever you're supporting. The swim was, you know, he basically sighting off me. He has to just stay next to me. So, you know, you're so used to having somebody swim right next to you and you try to move over, right? Because you're like, oh, we're hitting each other. Well, if I started moving over to the right to get away from him, he's going to swim following me thinking, oh, this is the way we got to go. So, you know, you really had to make sure, well, I can't keep swimming right. We're going to get off course. I physically had to be like, stay over on your side. you know, but it's really humbling. And if you can ever do it, I highly recommend it. It's like no other. And just that feeling of doing it with somebody is truly, truly amazing. And yeah. And it is great. You have company on the bike, so you get to talk to somebody on the bike the whole time. So it's not, the bike is not as boring as a normal race because you can sit and talk to somebody.
Maybe no peeing on the bike though, right?
That was literally one of the things he told me first. There's no peeing on the bike. And I had joked with him like, I want to show dominance here. I thought that was like who's alpha male. Is marking their territory, but it was a no-go. No peeing on the bike.
That's awesome. Now, do you have to go through training to be a guide, or do you just sign up, or does somebody reach out to you?
No, well, I knew them, so they reached out to me on that one. And then thankfully they live about an hour and a half away, so we would meet halfway and practice on the bike, which I highly suggest practicing first because especially on like an Ironman course where you have that tight out, like an out and back, and there's a tight turnaround. Mm-hmm. Trying to U-turn a tandem bike is definitely, you need some room. You need some room. Another thing that, you know, you're just taking for granted, you know, you need the room. You have to let them know what's going on. And again, and just even making sure your guys' cadence is the same and getting that kind of linked up because the drivetrains are together. When you can't just stop pedaling because it messes him up because it's all together. You have to say, you know, I'm stopping pedaling. We're slowing down to stop. We're unclipping. Put your right foot down. And everything has to be together. You know, you just can't, oh, I'm stopping. And because he's still pedaling and it's going to jerk you forward. And so, yeah, that practice definitely needs to be there for sure.
Wow. What a great way to get back to the sport. I mean, I know that's one of the things we've talked about is getting out there this year, just not personal race goals for yourself, but volunteering, getting out there. But another one we can add to the list, if ever presented, is, I mean, what a day, but guiding. That's a whole nother level of giving back to the sport and volunteering time and expertise. So what's racing looking like for you now? I mean, you've done these extremes. I mean, do you still have that bug? Are you still scratching that? Are you looking at other things? What's racing looking like these days?
That's been a great, I've been honestly fighting that for the last few months. You know, I raced in Nepal, in the Himalayan mountains in May. And that was amazing. And so I was been trying to figure out what is next. That's been eating away at me. And I kind of was going to steer towards the ultra running and looking at some of those big races, but ultra running has gotten so big.
Badwater,
which unfortunately you have to have a resume. So right. I've been trying to get the races to build a resume. Well, they're all, you just can't sign up anymore. They're all lotteries. Mm-hmm. And so I put in for a few that the Badwater looks at for the resume and I didn't get into any of them. And, you know, again, it's the same thing, all these spots, all these people, there's only so many. And then the more you enter, the more lottery positions you get. So I'm trying to build my ultra resume so that I can, Badwater was the goal was on there. So just trying to get into the right races that Badwater looks at to,
right.
you know, they just don't want Matt's 100-mile race, you know,
right.
through the forest. They are looking at, you know, Leadville and
yep.
the Hawaiian one. I can't remember the name offhand. They're it's nice to have other ones, but they look at the big, hard, specific ones really to make sure you're qualified to do that race. So
you mean your extreme tries don't count?
No, unfortunately wow. they don't.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm signed up for Iron Cowboy has an extreme race in Utah. And mm-hmm. that is in July. I'm signed up for that. So that is on the list. That's to go there and see how good I can do. And then there is another race that's beeping really loud on the radar in October. I've been kind of keeping it on the down low. My coach gave me the okay. I've been trying to line some things up for it. It's called Amazonian Extreme. It's in the Amazon jungle.
Wow. So this is breaking news. You're hearing it first here today, everybody.
Yeah, breaking news. October 28th. It's on my birthday. So I feel it's meant to be.
Wow.
There's some signs there.
Yep.
So anacondas are what you're looking for now. Bears weren't enough. You want anacondas.
Yes. And there's black panthers, they said we have to be aware of too, and some other big crazy animals. But yeah, it's a 4K swim
in piranhas.
I was thinking piranhas too. Some river there, 4K swim in the river. It's all
downriver, I hope.
Yeah, it is actually downriver. it is actually downriver.
It's upstream. That's what makes it extreme.
Yeah, there's no support on this one. It's just you literally the villages in the jungle, the villages are going to be like giving you water and stuff. The bike is single track, basically mountain bike with 22,000 feet of elevation gain on the bike. And the run is 28 miles and with like 5,000 feet of elevation gain in the, so I think humidity is going to be an issue. And, it's going to be a long time on the bike. You got 32 hours to complete it.
I just really hope your life insurance agent isn't listening. No. I mean, how did, wow.
I think my wife upped the policy on that.
Actually. I was going to say, yeah, like, oh my goodness.
And she's not going to that race. She said there's zero chance she's going there. So.
How many countries does this go through?
It's just all around in the little
the Amazon
there.
Wow.
So that
I'd like to. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say that's the next crazy thing that's really been pulling at me to do it, and it's unfortunately it's our first time going to be doing it, so we're kind of like the guinea pigs of it. So, which makes it more difficult because I can't look at anybody else's stuff or see a race report or anything to kind of get some kind of idea on it. And you know how the descriptions are just so vague. It's like you're going to be crossing rivers and mud. And I'm like, well, is there quicksand? Am I going to need, well, how crazy is this? And then I'm like, well, 22,000 feet on a mountain bike, single track, it's going to be a long time on a bike.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe some carrying of that bike too.
Yeah, well, for sure.
I imagine.
Yeah, definitely.
This is like Survivor meets triathlon,
right?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm hearing. Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome.
Probably need to start thinking about bringing this home. I want to circle it all the way around to probably a ton of our listeners are obviously not extreme triathletes. There are probably some people you coach that are getting ready to do their first Ironman. You talked about a sea race and how humbling that is, but how important that is to set you up for your A race. I think that's a lesson we can take away from what you've been doing and how you've done it. What are your other lessons that maybe a new triathlete who would be totally intimidated to talk to you and about your story, but what about your story would help inspire them and be able to be that triathlete they want to be?
Well, I mean, I was, and I still am, I'm a normal guy. I had, again, I wasn't a high school cross country runner, swimmer. There was zero background in any of the three disciplines. If you can dream it, I say go for it. And I mean, one of my biggest things I like to tell my athletes or just anybody in general is if you see something, a race that you want to do and it's on your mind, don't be like, you know, maybe 5 years down the road, I'm going to do it. Go for it and figure out how you're going to get there then. I see a lot of these people saying, hey, oh, I'm going to sign up for this race. And then all of a sudden that race, something happens and that race stops. And they're like, oh, I always wanted to go do that. And I kept putting it off. Or, you know, I wanted to go do this and visit this place. And God forbid something happens and they're not able to travel. Again, like COVID, all of a sudden everything shut down. And if there's something you want to go do, don't feel like, oh, let me figure out a plan. And first, let me see if I can make this work. And I say, sign up for it and figure that out later and you'll make it happen. And maybe you fail at it and you don't make it, but you're learning and you can come back stronger the next time. I see so many people missing out on life because they're going to do it later and that later is not guaranteed.
I love that. I mean, one of the first times we met Jason, I remember we were sitting there talking and I think it was over breakfast and you told me that same exact story and gave me that same speech. It stuck. I tell a lot of people, it's like, just say yes, jump in, plant that seed, go for it. That's so far out of my comfort zone because I like to have a plan. I like to, you know, nail every detail down. But I'm trying to get there.
Yeah, because we always say, oh, well, when I get in better shape, I'm going to go. But are we ever in that perfect shape we want to be in? I mean, no. Most of us are very type A and we're always, as soon as we kind of get to where we thought that perfect shape was, that new perfect shape has jumped up three different levels, yes. More levels. And so then you're like, yep. Oh, well, I'm going to wait till I get to that level. And you're always, it's like Lucy pulling the football from Charlie Brown. You know, you're always, it's always keeps moving. That goal keeps moving of where you're at. Yeah. So just go for it. And you know, like when we brought up my dad earlier, he passed away out of nowhere young. I mean, he was 64 and he was diabetic and his insulin dropped so much at night and he had a massive heart attack. And, you know, he had all these plans. I'm going to do this. I'm going to travel here. I'm going to travel there. He never got to go do them. And so after that, I promised myself, if I have any means possible to go do something, I'm doing it because once that bus stops that we're on that bus ride, we're done.
I think we just went full circle on my quote. It's not about having time. It's about making time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No doubt. No doubt.
Wow.
Jason, I feel like we could keep going, but we're going to definitely have to have you back after Utah and maybe in October.
After the Amazon.
Hopefully I come back.
Oh, yeah. You will.
I have no doubt you will, man. No doubt whatsoever. Yep. So
it's been awesome talking to you and having you on. Just great. So we'll probably get this thing close to wrapped up, but there is a few news stories out there. I think one is just circling back to episode 3 and Kay Grant, who I think everyone on the call knows. I know. Do you know Kay? Yeah. I think, Jason, I'm sure from TriDot and she's been inspiring some young girls in her neighborhood to get to the holiday race, and they completed the run. So big shout out to Kay and what she did to inspire those girls. And we're just so proud of her and everything she accomplished with that.
It was great this week during our coach call. You know, she was telling me how prepared they were and the whole group of girls. They were going to start with the 5K and then it just came down to the 1 mile, bitter cold. Like we're talking like 12 degrees today in Boise, snow on the ground. And, you know, she had to make sure with all the parents, no exposed skin. They needed closed-toed shoes. I mean, a lot of these girls are coming from backgrounds that they just don't have a lot. So they got out there, they did it. And I gotta brag on Kay. Love that woman to death. Heart of gold. She's so selfless, caring, encouraging, motivating. I could go on and on. She had a 5K time trial that day herself. And she got up that morning and went out there and did that fun run, dressed up as Mrs. Claus with her husband, Brian, dressed up as Santa Claus, took care of those girls all morning long. Then she comes home and she texts me and says, all right, coach, I'm going to go do my 5K now. And I just want to report back. She PR'd it by 5 seconds. So she truly is the old bag, the badass grandma. So congrats, Kay. Super proud of you and all your girls. So just amazing. Amazing. So
love it.
Yeah.
That's so good. The other big news that I don't know if everybody's heard about it, but Gwen Jorgensen deciding to come back to triathlon and shooting for the Olympics and maybe the mixed relay team. So I don't know. What do you guys think about that? That's no doubt an interesting situation.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think, she's back more on the mixed relay. So I don't think we'll see her necessarily right away unless she breaks out into more of the mid to long distance tries. But excited for her. I think she's, got a lot of inspiration from, say, Chelsea Sodaro and Sarah Chu and whatnot, and just other women coming back and racing after childbirth. Maybe she listened to our podcast with Amanda Allman last week. Maybe that inspired her too. But
that was the tipping point. It had to be. Yeah.
Just so coincidental that her news came out after our podcast. Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But no, excited for her.
Yeah. So it definitely had to be your podcast that did it. I'm right? I'm guaranteeing that was it.
Everything's record breaking. We got Verbi announcing breaking news as it's happening live. So I don't know. What's everybody got going on this week with the holidays? Any travel, anything going on with anybody or what?
I'm stuck at home. I'm out of vacation days because I've had too much going on this year with racing. So,
Mr. Dual World Championship, right? St. George and Kona.
It was a long, was a long trip, but we had a lot of fun. But unfortunately, I'm that guy in the office the next 2 weeks.
There you go.
The lights are going to go out because the darn sensors will keep turning off because no one's walking around.
My son got done school last Friday, so he's on what they call winter break for the next, I don't think they go back till January 3rd. So he's working a few extra shifts, doing some extra stuff, and just taking some, in my opinion, well-deserved rest. Been a busy soccer season, really busting his butt with school, AP calculus. Typical work week for me. And then I'm excited. Jillian's coming to town for a little while. My mom will be in town for a while. So do the family thing. And then next week, the week after Christmas, hopefully a little bit of downtime and play some. So
good.
Yep. My kids are still in school till Wednesday. They have a half day, and then we'll head down to Oregon, see family down there, and then come back, and then they fly to go see their dad in Boise Christmas evening, and then I fly out the next day out to North Carolina to go hang out and see Matt for a bit, and I ended up somehow with extra vacation days, Jay. I don't know. Clearly, I should have taken some more time off leading into races or coming out of them. I remember on the drive to Boulder, I was working while we're driving out there. And in hindsight, I was like, I should have just taken the day off. But
of course.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm with Jay. Somehow my vacation's all gone too. So I'm working. So if you need to use some of your vacation days and want to pass it our way, I'm sure we could help you burn some hours off. I'd be more than happy.
I'm thinking it's going
to
be a little bit warmer in sunny San Diego than it is here in North Carolina or Seattle or Baltimore. So maybe we'll take you up on that.
Yeah.
They're saying the coldest Christmas in many, many years here. So we're looking forward to maybe a white Christmas. We'll see.
It's going to be 16 degrees here in North Carolina. For everybody that thinks that we're in the South and it's always nice, 16 degrees this week. So anyway.
But I had a long t-shirt on today, if that makes you feel any better. But still shorts and flip-flops. But other than
that,
he's lying. He's wearing spandex, everyone. He's lying.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this has been awesome. Jason, just want to say thank you again. It's been awesome hearing your story, hearing about your journey, the extreme tries that you do, the opportunity to hang out with the Conquer 100 and James Lawrence, and then just how you give back to the sport. Yeah, it's been such a joy to hear your story. And so just want to say thank you again very much.
Well, thank you for having me and letting me come on your podcast and tell my story. And to me, it's just an everyday thing, kind of normal. So I'm glad other people are interested in it. And if it can help anybody out, I'm so glad to get it out there so it can motivate somebody or anything that it can do.
Good. Well, I'm sure we'll definitely have you. We'll have you back. Have to put you in the lineup to hear about everything later in the year, next year. And I just want to also say thank you to all of our listeners, and hope that you guys are enjoying the podcast as much as we are. Love hearing all the stories from our different guests, and excited for the guests that we still have to come in the lineup. As a reminder too, if you have any questions or any inspiring stories you'd like to share with us, or tips or anything you'd like us to answer on a future podcast, you can always reach out to us at triathlonagegroupjourney@gmail.com or on Instagram at triathlonagegroupjourney. And just want to thank you. Thank you again. And thanks, guys. I hope you have a great week and a very Merry Christmas. I think we'll do a pod just after Christmas.
Yep. Definitely. Have an awesome Christmas, everybody, and happy holidays.
Yes, and happy holidays to those that don't celebrate Christmas.
And just remember, love those close to you, guys. Life's too short. All right, make it a great week.
Yep. Thanks. Bye, guys.